Yes, good morning, Radio Statler. I know I said that about five times now. Let's see here. We have people here who are talking to us on IRC, mainly a lot of good mornings. Beaches is on there. How is Beaches awake? Is Beaches ever asleep? Like, I don't know. Big fan of Beaches. He's a really sweet guy. Our bot here says that the weather is currently, as of 7:55 a.m., the weather here in New York City is clear at 81 degrees Fahrenheit, 27 degrees Celsius, with a 56% humidity. That the forecast for today is clear with a high of 95 degrees Fahrenheit, 37 Celsius, and a low of 74 Fahrenheit, 23 degrees Celsius. It was a hot one yesterday, and 98. Ooh, that's going to be fun. It has definitely been very, very hot and humid. Muggy here in New York, as it is pretty much every hope. In fact, I went outside yesterday to grab something to eat and was like, yep, it's hope, all right. It's deadly. And his side pocket is acting weird on his phone. I'm assuming he's trying to catch a Pokemon. I haven't seen anyone play this game yet, to be honest with you, although it's clearly all over the internet. I don't actually play Pokemon. Are you playing Pokemon, side pocket?
No, my apps just load slow.
No, his apps just load slow. Whatever the hell that means. Is he trying to play Pokemon?
I'm trying to get,
He's trying to get...
What do you call it?
I don't know what you call it, side pocket. You tell me what you call it. You wanted me to get closer to the mic here, so I'm
just keep talking.
Move that closer to my mouth. So, this has been my, how many hope, let's see here. Last one was 10 years, this would be 12 years, so that would be my seventh hope here. As I said last time, it's been really interesting to watch technology evolve over time and to see how that makes the talks change. With the revolution of 3D printing, of hackerspaces, of more accessible technology, especially with smartphones, people are using this in more and more incredible ways, more and more unique and creative ways. And a lot of talks, there's a lot of talks that you see and things that people are talking about that just couldn't have happened when I first started coming to Hope, because I am an old, old fart at this point. And that's okay. I forget my sweetie last night, who is at this conference, and we'll be hearing from him tomorrow on the Newbie Talk, was talking about something. Oh, he said that one of the people was talking about a side project, their talk, this thing called the Rainforest Project, where what happens is they take old Androids that you really wouldn't want to use anymore, and they somehow waterproof them, and they put them in rainforest, and they have them in a way that kind of constantly broadcasts or something, or that it's triggered by the sound of chainsaws, so that if when illegal poachers come into the rainforest, the sound of the chainsaw triggers the phone to call the police to come and stop the illegal poachers from cutting down the trees illegally. Again, this is obviously for illegal cutting down, and that's incredible. That is so incredible, the things that people are doing with tech these days. I'm just kind of blown away. My housemate, actually, who's not here, she is actually in her mid-60s. And she has been interested in tech her entire life. And I was talking to her the other day, and I was asking her, you know, when you were a kid, if you would have been able to imagine any of the stuff that we had nowadays, if, you know, how you would have reacted to it. And she was just, you know, how much she would have loved that and wished that it was here sooner, because, I mean, she works in tech. She's, you know, she's a coder. She makes a decent wage being a long-term software engineer and has, you know, obviously has the means to buy some fun tech stuff and fiddle around, and her thinks she likes building robots, and she's always tinkering in our bedroom, soldering things, building things, making things do things, and she basically has a lab in her bedroom, and her ability to access technology that does really amazing things, and just simple parts is amazing. She's got these parts that are like almost like an erector set, except it's like a very grown-up adult erector set. and they're made out of like aluminum. They look like they're going to be really heavy, but they're actually really lightweight. And I remember she was showing me a chip, an Adafruit chip, a little board that she was soldering on the other day, and it was like probably, I don't know, about a little bit larger than the size of my thumbnail. Yeah, I have small hands, but it's just incredible the size of this, how small it was, and what it does. I think it had like 9 different movement sensors, and for speed and direction and acceleration and stuff. Anybody listening, if you're getting feedback, and I'm not exactly sure what I need to do to stop that. If there's an engineer out here, could they please come into the booth and help me out with the feedback issue? Okay, here. Let's see if we can get it out of here.
Side pocket!
There's a lot of feedback. I don't know how to get rid of it. There we go. We got an engineer coming.
I can lower this. You need to get closer.
I'm as close to the mic as I can get. I don't think you understand that. There we go. That's better. Okay. I see. What I'm actually hearing is the feedback coming from somewhere. And it's coming, and the radio's on about a second delay. So, testing, talking. Okay, let's try that. I'm very sorry for the delay. What's your name?
Mike.
Lucky?
Stop, you can call me Stop It.
Stop It?
Stop It.
Stop It. Okay, thank you, Stop It. I apologize for the interruption. So it's always amazing to go around every hope and to see the new things coming out. And this year I've noticed there's a lot of extra talks about security data, which there's always those things, but oftentimes there's a lot more like a tech hacking talk, and there's a lot more like digital freedoms and privacy talks this year, and I like that. That's good. I find that to be something that's more accessible to everybody, even if you don't necessarily understand the tech behind it. I think it allows people to get in on more of a hands-on type deal. I'm currently sitting here with the program and looking over some of the different things that have been available. I'm trying to get Friday scheduled. There we go. What all happened yesterday? Well, let's see what's going to happen today. You all know what happened yesterday. There's going to be a talk on women in cybersecurity. The keynote address with Cory Doctorow is going to be going on today. At 10 a.m., there's going to be some interesting stuff here about something about water security. There's a talk about surveillance. A talk about being a broadcast anthropologist. I don't even know what that means, but I'm sure that'll be fascinating. It's always really interesting. Someone else is going to be giving a sex talk. Yes, somebody else, not me, is going to be giving a sex talk on Saturday at 1900, 7 p.m. Hacking sex, toys, tools, and tips for empowerment and pleasure, which I read through that, and that's going to be very, it seems like it's going to be very focused on like sex toys, especially the techie sex toys, and I think that's wonderful because that's something that, while I mentioned in my talk ages ago, is something I really don't know much about, so I'm glad to see other people are talking about it. Johannes is going to be doing a one about, oh, what the fuck are you talking about? Storytelling for hackers, which would be very fascinating. It seems like it's going to be a really interesting schedule this time, and every year I've been seeing a lot more newbies and a lot of new faces this time. I'm not you'd think you'd recognize more and more people, but in some ways I'm recognizing less and less, and I think that's great. It means we're getting some new fresh blood in here to learn new things and to teach us new things, and I mean, that's what it's all about, right? About learning new things and teaching new things to new people. Let's see, it is 8:24 a.m. This morning when I got up, the floor was really empty. I was lazy, and instead of trying to walk around from the normal elevator bank, I actually took the elevator up to 18 and took the express elevator down. And when I stepped off the elevator, I looked around the room, and all was quiet, all was silent. There wasn't really anyone in sight. I wandered over to the info desk, and Neo was there. But I took a couple of slow moments to walk through the area where all the vendors are. And I just kind of tried to be in the moment, to feel the silence, if you will, to feel the anticipation of the day ahead. And it was kind of a little special moment. It kind of gave me some chills. It was really neat. And it's kind of stuff like that. It's kind of the things I'm going to be talking about in my talk later today. And things like that, as Side Pocket was talking about with me earlier, I feel like are accessible to all people. And we can use them to build better lives for ourselves, more fulfilling lives for ourselves. I can spoil a little bit from my talk here. I'm no longer just Cable Flame. I am actually now Reverend Cable Flame. I am a minister in the Universal Life Church. Yes, it's one of those churches you can go online and sign up for ordination online, but I take mine really, really seriously because I would like to start a ministry, which is a theistically neutral ministry, meaning we don't espouse God one way or the other, so that people who believe or don't believe, depending, can come together and unite around common values to love each other, to work together to make a better world, to remember the good things in life, to explore the mysteries of the questions we don't have answers to right now, to remember the ways that, sadly, you know, we all have done wrong as humans, and to forgive each other as we need forgiveness, to encourage each other to go and make amends, to try to learn together on how to be better people, and to then go out together, have a critical mass, to go forth and become those better people. And to also have a ministry where we take people who are the most shunned by society, whether because of who they are or what they've done, and to remind them that there is good inside them and that they can, you know, if they have done horrible wrongs, can reform their lives and to be good people again, and to remind them that regardless, they are loved, because I feel it's very important that we love all people regardless, because there is, this is a personal belief of mine, but I think there's hope for everybody. Even there's got to be ways that we can change ourselves for the better, and it's not going to be easy, but it's there, and that gives me personal hope, and it allows me to walk through the world every day, and it allows me to wake up and be with myself every day, to know that every second is a new second. And not really the 12-step type, not my thing, but they do have a couple of interesting points. The one day at a time thing is pretty good. Sometimes it's got to go down to 1 hour, 1 minute, 1 second, but to know that, you know, every minute is a new minute, every day is a new day, to go forth and make the world a better place, make ourselves better, is very encouraging to me. Even in the times when it can be very hard to go forth and do that. And as hackers, our ideal hacker society is a meritocracy, and which is good when we pull it off, but we all have our subconscious biases and sometimes not so subconscious. And at what point who decides what merit is? I think that's another interesting point of what makes the merit in the meritocracy. Who decides what merit looks like? Do different people have different concepts of merit? And from there, then how do we decide, you know, who's what? And I've always, I feel like geek culture should be like a non-hierarchical culture. I don't really believe in geek celebrities, because it seems like we're raising people up higher than other people, and that just makes me uncomfortable. Like, my ideal geek culture would be not that people wouldn't be well known, and not that people can't do cool things, but that we're kind of all in this together. And yeah, sure, you can admire said person over there, whoever they are, but I like it to know that we're all equal, you know? That we're all smart and awesome and curious and in this together. And we all respect each other accordingly. And I like to see these things happen in my geek culture and in my hacker culture. A culture of mutual respect and listening, and a culture that is made in such a way that's healthy for everyone who is involved in it, and that when bad things happen, that they are, instead of pushing away the person who did it, that we draw them in closer. That we help the people who were hurt, obviously, but instead of just going, oh, you're a horrible person, pushing them over there to the side, going, okay, you did a bad thing, and it's not okay, but you know, that's okay. We're not going to just cast you out because of a bad thing. We're going to say, okay, why did you do it? Do you realize you did it? Do you know why you did it? Can we work on the reason why you did it? And it's going to be a long discernment process. And it's going to be a long process to try to bring said person back into the fold in ways that aren't going to hurt people if they have a history of hurting people. But I think it's important for us, because there are a lot of people who do things that hurt others, but that have a bit merit in a lot of other ways, and that the way that we can keep people accountable isn't by merely shunning, because at that point you can just say, oh, well, they're a bad person, and of course they did bad things because they're a bad person, so we're just going to write them off. The way I see it is that if we, instead of pushing them away, if we bring them closer, if we hold them in love more, and we can hold them accountable because we know what they're doing, and we are working with them to be able to try to help them not hurt people anymore. I think that's a better way to go forward, and to making a more just culture, whether we're talking about culture at large or our own hacker cultures. And it's a way that, plus if you do that, if the person has other cool things, traits, we can figure out a way to, you know, keep those good things going on while still addressing the bad. And that's kind of one of my big things these days. I'm really interested in that sort of ideal. I think as hackers, we talk a lot about the intellect, because that's our world of creativity, of study, scholarship, whether it's formalized scholarship, or hackers like to do a lot on their own, that is also very cool. We talk a lot, though, about the mind. And we don't always talk a lot about the body. Some people are into body hacking, that's totally cool. But we don't talk more about, like, the feelings, and I mean, if I can use the word soul in more of a secular context than a spiritual context, you know, our emotional well-being, that which makes us ourselves, our spirit, if you will. We don't talk a lot about how to feed that, how to keep ourselves from emotionally burning out, excuse me for a second, need my drink, how to create a hacker culture that is healthy, not just for our intellect, for our intellectual curiosity, but for our emotional well-being, a holistic hacker culture, if you will. Long have we had unspoken values of things like hard drinking, or not saying that being drunk isn't fun, hard drinking, or hey, I've been up for 36 hours and I'm still hacking at this here, or, you know, only eating ramen, and we put ourselves through these trials and these ordeals, and as part of our culture in some ways, but as a lot of us get older, we're starting to question these. because we're like, you know, I can't keep doing this. I personally am 34 at this point. And I made sure I was in bed last night by, I don't know, what, 1 a.m., I think, so that I could be up for now. And it's a little rough. So creating a hacker culture. I'm not saying that we're never going to stretch ourselves. I understand that a lot of us feel needs for to stretch our own limits, like to go through our deals. And I'm not going to say we'll never do that, but to recognize what we're doing when we're doing it and to make these conscious choices and to make the choice to take care of ourselves better so that we don't burn out as much, whether it's physical burnout, whether it's health issues, whether it's emotional health issues. There was talks about mental health about 2 weeks ago, I believe it was. And I'm glad we had those talks because I think we had a rash of suicides in the community. I'm glad we had those talks on mental illness. That should have been the beginning of a dialogue instead of just a single thing. And I would like to see more. I would like to see a booth here from, like, you know, a big 501c3, you know, Hackers for Mental Health. Or, you know, the Holistic Hacker Foundation, where we talk more about not just intellectual stuff, but how to take care of ourselves as hackers so that when we go forward in the future, we can continue to go forward in the future. We'll be here. We won't burn ourselves out so much. And it would be great to see people addressing these things. And that's kind of one of the reasons I want to talk about the spirituality thing is because people aren't really talking about that. And I think it'd be interesting because it's such a multifaceted path. I mean, I sat down to try to write, trying to kind of wrap my brain around, not the entirety of religion, but kind of the entirety of religion, trying to get the basic broad picture down so that we can discuss it. And Wikipedia is a rabbit hole. I spent hours poring over pages, and this page led to that page, and I ended up making this flowchart on the concept of God. Just the concept of God, not touching afterlife, not touching any other part of religion. Simply the concept of God. And it took me like an hour and a half to make a flowchart because I had to learn a new tool. But it's huge, and it goes all sorts of interesting places, you know. It starts with God. Yes, no, maybe, and then it's complicated. It's kind of like a fourth option I had for some interesting ideas on God that I had personally come up with that didn't fit under any of the other categories. But no kind of ends with atheism, maybe kind of ends with agnosticism. But once you go on the yes side, you start getting into all sorts of fascinating possibilities, you know. Okay, so yes, God. How many? One or multiple? All right. Let's say multiple. After that, then you have multiple two or more than that. Because if you have two, you then have bitheism and ditheism. I'm not going to get them mixed up. One of them is two gods that complement each other, and one of them are two gods that are kind of at opposition with each other. Trying to think of examples of those. Male, female. You know, the god and the goddess, if you wish. That would be the complementary gods, while you would have like light and dark trying to cancel each other out, which could be considered complementary or could be considered as adversaries. There's the ideas of, okay, multiple gods, so how many of those gods are worthy of worship? Because there's a concept called henotheism, which means that you believe in multiple gods, but only one of them is worthy of worship. There's a concept that, I think that's henotheism. There's the concept that all gods are worthy of worship, but you're only worshiping one, making it easier, I guess. There's the concept that multiple gods are worthy of worship. There's the concept that, if you have God, then are we talking, how are we talking immanence or transcendence? Meaning God is in and of the universe, God is in everything, or are we talking that God is separate from the universe, transcendent from the universe? Okay, God's in the universe, we're talking pantheism or panentheism, meaning pantheism means God, the universe, is the exact same thing, that all that exists is God, and that God isn't all that exists, and that outside of what exists, there is no God. Panentheism says that Stape believes that they are God. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. That's kind of what I also find interesting about all this. We have no hard way of proving right now. I find that fascinating. I think it's amazing. I like living in the questions. I have to admit, I'm a soft science type person. I'm not really a hard science. Hard sciences are awesome. I love me some soft sciences. The studies of people, the study of how people think, the study of how people form societies, studies of things beyond, you know, simple things that we can test, things that we don't know, things that we haven't proven yet, things that may never be able to be proven. I find it all fascinating. Going back to the God thing, though. Let's see, Stape says that everyone exists only because I do. Now, that's an interesting mindset, and that's one that I could say that everything exists only because I do. And the problem is none of us really know what's outside. Adiok says, shit, you're on to us. How do we know that what exists outside our minds is really real? You know, the whole Matrix idea. I remember watching The Matrix, and I get confused with movies, so it took me about 4 or 5 watchings to really get all of what's going on. But the idea of, you know, how do we not know we're in The Matrix? I mean, how do we not know we're on the holodeck? Sure, you can say computer and program, and nothing happens, but all we can really do is go forward with the senses that we have and, you know, try to use scientific methods to prove the world exists or the universe exists, but how do we know the scientific methods aren't also part of that system? We don't. And I find all this stuff to be absolutely fascinating. But who knows what's... In some ways, I mean, you know, we use the scientific method to test what's real, and it's the best tool we have right now, but it's not perfect. And sometimes we have to take on faith what is real and what isn't. And that can be difficult at times, because we are definitely a people who want to know, who have this itch to find out the truth. And I find it incredibly admirable. Excuse me. So, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Oh, pantheism, panentheism. Pantheism is God's all that exists, and all that exists is God, and there's no God outside of what exists. Panentheism says that God isn't all that exists, and exists beyond that. So if we're talking a Venn diagram, the Venn diagram on pantheism, if, you know, God is blue and the universe is red, you have one single circle that's purple. If panentheism, God is blue and the world is red, you have a large blue circle inside a purple circle. So the blue and the red. So that's kind of the visual way you can look at that. But there's just so many ways of breaking all this down. This is just God. It's just the concept of God. Not talking at all about different afterlives, not talking at all about any other, about how to worship God, about God is worthy of worship, like, and this is assuming that God is worthy of worship, and then you have things that are completely outside of that, all those paradigms, like the concept of process theology, which some people may or may not have heard of. It boils down to God as a verb, that God is in the processes of the world, the processes of nature, yes, but also human processes, like forming of societies and revolution and things like that. And that's another way that some people view the divine. And it's fascinating stuff, the things that people come up with. And there are people who view divine in more pantheism or panentheism ways, like talk about the spirit of life or something like that. And that's, like I said, that's just God. That doesn't go at all into anything else. And it's just, it's such a huge rabbit hole. Such a huge time sink, in a good way. I, you know, like I said, I sat down to try to be like, all right, let me get myself a kind of basic understanding of all this. You know, 5 hours later, I emerge, like, one little tiny part of it done, and my head being like, I need to eat. Oh my God, I'm exhausted. I haven't eaten. What the hell? I have to go to the bathroom. And it's just fascinating to me. And I've always been this way, and it might surprise people. I mean, I don't see my sexuality thing as being anywhere in, as being, I see it as part of it. I don't see it as being in opposition to it. It's part of what I tried to teach with the sexuality thing, is to bring pleasure to people, bring pleasure to others, and to respect others and their needs, and that everybody's sexuality is okay. It's what you do with it that counts. I'm an incredibly firm proponent of a controversial idea that there is no such thing as bad sexuality or wrong sexuality or a bad fetish. And yeah, that means the big no-nos, you know. But it's how you, it's what you do with those desires that count. I mean, nobody can choose their desires. People don't choose. Nobody chooses to be, I don't know, attracted to horses. Nobody chooses to be horse sexual. But whether or not they go forward and actually, you know, actually hurt an animal, whether they go forward to actually do something with an animal without explicit consent, that's what matters. I mean, if you can, you know, fantasize about horses and role play with your partner, and they sell dildos, they're shaped in the size of horse penises, and play with one of those and all that, then you can try to scratch that itch you have without actually hurting anyone. And I'm a huge proponent of this, and I think by espousing these acceptance ideas as well as but simultaneously espousing the ideas of ethical expression of one's sexuality in a way that isn't harming others, that isn't violating the consent of others, that is careful about others' needs, wants, and desires, and then that also includes the needs to not engage in sexual behavior. I think these are our crucial parts of a ministry of teaching the world how to interact with each other in ways that are healthy towards each other, and the ways that respect everybody's inherent worth and dignity, which is something I definitely believe in, is the inherent worth and dignity of all people. Unitarian Universalism has a set of principles, and that is the first of their principles, the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. And I believe in that, and I believe in it beyond humans. I believe in the inherent worth and dignity of, if we ever found this extraterrestrial life, they've got it too, you know, any kind of, I separate out human from person, and that I watch too much Star Trek, let's be honest. But no, I mean, watching Star Trek has been a wonderful guide for me to help hone my sense of who belongs, who doesn't, who deserves rights, who doesn't. Because as you watch Star Trek, it takes you on a journey through, I mean, I've never watched the original series. I started with Next Gen. Next Gen, you start to ask questions about what makes a person because of Data, the android, who really wants, what's interesting is he really wants to be a person. And then you end up with Deep Space Nine, where, spoiler alert, you find out that Dr. Julian Bashir, the chief medic on board, is was genetically engineered in an illegal genetic engineering experiment because he wasn't a very bright kid, so they made him like super smart. And then you talk about, you know, who is he as a person? But then beyond that, on Star Trek Voyager, you have the emergency medical hologram of the, who goes by the doctor. And yeah, like in Doctor Who, but different. And yes, lots of crossover fic. And he's a hologram, and then the idea of whether he's a person or not and what his rights are, because he is fully sentient. But when they first start out, people will like turn off the EMH without asking if he's doing anything. He ends up, spoiler alert for the first episode, chief medic on board, the human medic, dies. In fact, they didn't have a very large medical crew, so he is left as the ship's only doctor. Actually, that kind of seems like a glaring plot hole. How do they only have one doctor on board a ship of over 100 people? Anyways. He becomes the ship's primary doctor, so he needs to do things like, you know, work on lab cultures and things like that when people aren't in the room, but people would just turn him off without asking whether or not he wanted to be turned off. So it explores various ideas of what makes a person, and I really feel that that kind of helped inform my ethics of not just what makes a person in a future format of, you know, are robots people, our projections, people, you know, what makes sentience, what makes personhood. I don't like to say humanity because I've watched enough Star Trek to know that, you know, you don't have to be human to be a person. I definitely separate those two out. And to, it also helps if we're looking at, you know, if we can accept the Doctor as a person and he's a hologram, then what does that say about all the human beings that are on our planet right now? That we know are human and that are different from us in their skin tone, their culture, the language they speak, the food they eat, their gender, whatever you have. And I know that, you know, that was one of Gene Roddenberry's main ideas, was to try to deal with some of this, because I know he dealt with some of it in the original series, like with the episode where there were two different races and they look exactly the same, except one half was painted black, one half was painted white, and depending on whether it was your right side or your left side that was painted black or white, there were two different the species were kind of at war with each other, because no, the black on the left is right, no, the black on the right is right. And so, you know, they dealt with these concepts, and Next Gen dealt with the concept of having a race of androgynous people. And there was a member of the race named Soren who believed herself, I suppose, to be female and has always had these female feelings but have had to hide them because society believes that those are wrong and puts basically people through reparative therapy to fix these feelings. And there's love affair with Riker, blah, blah, blah. It's a good episode. Watch it. Especially if you like Riker romance. Plus, Riker's hot. But, Star Trek tried to tackle these questions. And they had, Star Trek had the first interracial kiss on broadcast television. It's been a groundbreaking show, and I find that watching it really helps kind of hone my sense of ethics and hone my sense of how to better ourselves as humanity. And I find that a lot of subjects that one would think that wouldn't necessarily tie into spirituality or religion can be very spiritual or religious. It's kind of my thing. I really like finding, you know, the sacred and the profane. I have a blog on the internet called Profanity and Prophecy because of this, where I talk about things like that. I talk about my spirituality as well as I talk about putting a sense of ethics and applying a ethical set of standards to how we do things like online social justice, because I think that's very important. I think it's important to act right when we're trying to do right. Otherwise, we're only going to drag right down. And we're not going to elevate bad tactics. All we're going to do is just spoil our own cause. So, yeah. Multiple sources. And I definitely feel there's multiple ways of getting at the same thing. But that as a hacker community, if we are going to see ourselves as, quote, a more evolved people or a better people, if we're going to reject society, if we're going to say the way that society does things isn't necessarily right, and we're going to create our own little culture over here, then it's our place that if we're going to do that, to also try to better that culture at the same time, to try to not fall into the same traps that the culture in the outside world falls into. If we're going to have a meritocracy, let's have a meritocracy. And as I mentioned earlier, what makes merit? Who decides that? I don't have answers for this. I don't know if there ever will be answers for this, but I think there are questions that need to be asked. I really love asking the questions, not necessarily expecting the answers, but if we all talk together, we might end up starting to get some answers out of it. And maybe we can be the leaders. Maybe as a hacker people, we can lead and role model an example, making ourselves an example for society at large, and be like, well, here's the issues of society that we've tackled and among ourselves, and here's how we've dealt with it, and here's how we've solved it. And, you know, here, take this, use this. I mean, we believe in open source. What about open source culture? I don't mean the culture around the open source movement, although that's cool too. I mean, can we open source our culture out to the world at large? Can we take who we are as a hacker people and go out into the world and infuse these, our values, to the world? But part of that is, I'm not going to say we don't have values. We have some values. I think we need to develop even more values, and we need to codify these things. We need to sit down. I mean, obviously, 100 hackers, 104 answers, so, you know, we're never going to fully get everyone on board, and I'm not expecting that, but to try to sit down and say, okay, we're a people. Who do we want to be as a people? Who are we are right now as a people, and how do we get to where we want to be as a people? I think is an interesting question, but I'm really into the social science and things, so I like to examine hacker culture more as a meta type thing than to you know, sit down and go, it's not my thing. But falling down rabbit holes on Wikipedia is. It is 8:54 a.m. here at Radio Statler in sunny midtown New York City. See, I have about 5 minutes in the radio. Not Beaches. Oh boy, thank you Beaches for putting in the thing, in, or the thank you not Beaches for putting in phenomena in my head, but saying phenomenon. That's some prime earworm there. I appreciate having an earworm planted in my head before 9 a.m. in the morning. Yes, we do have Radio Statler here right in front of me running, and I would love to take your questions or your comments. Let's see here. We seem to be running a Mac client called Textual, which I'm not familiar with. If you would like to join us on our IRC channel, and we would love to have you, the network is irc.2600, that's 2600.net. Our channel is radio-statler. If you have never used IRC in the past, it's old school, but it works really great. I used to use a lot of IRC. You would download a client. From there, it will probably pop up a box. As long as it's a graphic client, it'll pop up a box asking for your network. You will put in your network. After that, it will send you a bunch of messages where you join the network. And at that, you will probably type, slash join hash radio hyphen Statler, and that will bring you into our channel. And you'll be asked to choose a username. So if you're using an old-fashioned client, you can do that. I know there are Java clients on the internet if you wish to join us. We would love to have you join us on our channel. We actually do sit here and read what you write, so it's not just going out in the ether. AudioX says you can also connect via our IRC. Is that an IC or an LC? I think it's LC. That is lowercase LC. IRC.LC is another way to connect to our IRC channel. It's very simple chat, but it's fun. We have a wide number of people in the channel right now. Most are lurking, but that is okay. You can talk to some of our radio engineers here. You can talk to the people who have created our shows and scheduled our shows together. And shoot, sit, have nice discussions, and leave questions and discuss things with people while they're on the air. So that can be a lot of fun. Let's see here. I'm kind of running out of context. That's okay. I can keep talking. The booth is currently covered in a lot of interesting graffiti. There's a dude reading a book. Says Radio Statler with the Radio Statler with the IRC information. Somebody says for a good time and put up a New York City phone number. Some very interesting penis drawings. Someone put up the hash, the URL for HackDC, which would be my local hackerspace. Actually, no, it wouldn't be. I live in Silver Spring, Maryland at the time, and there is a new one. It's not more of a hackerspace, it's more of the kind you buy your way into, more of a makerspace, but it's literally a block away from my house. But HackDC is in DC. If you're interested in joining a hackerspace, you just find out what hackers are all about. I recommend that you go to your local hackerspace sometime. They have an open house. And if you live in the Washington, D.C. area, you can go to HackDC. That would be at hacdc.org. They are in the St. Stephen's and the Incarnation Episcopal Church, which I find is a very special church. They have a very large office space attached, in which many different nonprofits have their offices. Up on the wall here we have, let's see here, some skull and crossbones, someone who writes NSA wasn't here, a sign that says Bunny from Bunny Byrne was here, a sign I think also says Bunny Byrne wasn't here, Mia wasn't here. It's interesting, there's lots of graffiti, and I will probably draw my own. Somebody probably rubbed the firefly, drew the
police public call box little sign that's on the TARDIS on the door here that says the store is closed, even though it is slightly open. It's interesting. If you are at the conference and you've never talked for Radio Statler this year, they've got a lot of people talking, so this might not be your year. But you might want to stop by, talk to the Radio Statler people, find out what goes into making a radio show, into running all this. Obviously, it requires an internet connection. There's a sound, like I said, a very large soundboard over here. Some engineers, people who have to schedule all this stuff, go down, and people who just come and talk on the internet. I know there's music that we share, and there is storytelling panels and all sorts, and lots of booze, apparently. I wish I could show you a picture right now of the table, which is covered in cans of, like, Coors Light and Bud Light. There's a couple of types of hard liquor on the table and a couple of bottles of water and such. It is now 9 a.m. Saturday morning here at Radio Statler. I am not sure if there is a show coming up after me. If I am required to continue talking, I will be more than happy to continue chatting with you all about different subjects. I don't see anybody trying to join us, so I'm going to assume that that is my cue to keep chatting with you all. It is, as I said earlier, very warm out today, and I recommend anybody who's currently at the conference to stay hydrated, to try to stay cool. I've learned that wet bandanas are a friend's excellent way of staying cool out there. But most of the time it's air conditioned, but the air conditioning isn't that good this year. I don't know what's going on with that. I heard there's a change in hotel management, so I don't know what's going on with that. I think what's interesting is when you take the 8 a.m. shift, which I have had for 3 years now, when you start out, it's quiet. It's quiet everywhere around you, as I mentioned earlier, as I did my walk across the mezzanine. Now it's not quiet anymore. At some point, the world starts to wake up around you. And when you emerge, you go into the booth, and it is still night. And once you emerge, it's 9 a.m., and it's no longer night, and there are people. And call me silly, but I find that exciting. I find it interesting to watch the world wake up around you. I was in Baden-Baden, Germany in 2005 with some friends of my girlfriend at the time, and we were staying at the youth hostel there, run by International Youth Hostels. And breakfast is early in the morning, and they only have it for like 2 hours. And I remember stumbling downstairs at like 7:30 a.m. to get breakfast. And everybody sat down with their bowls of yogurt and granola and their rolls and the kind of things they give you in a continental breakfast in Europe, which I'm quite fond of because it's not super sweet. And their coffee. And it was quiet in the breakfast in the food room. But as people started eating, they started waking up, and slowly it was the sound level of the room started rising the way that you would watch the sunrise in the morning. And it was like people rising up from the dead. It was amazing to watch people come alive, and all sorts of languages were flying across the room. A lot of German, obviously, but there was probably some English, and it was just a wonderful experience to watch everyone wake up. I guess one could call me a student of humanity. I love watching people. I'm kind of a loudmouth, I do a lot of talking, but to observe humanity and the way that they function and work is enjoyable. To watch the processes of the world. Maybe this is where process theologians come from. Maybe they watch the processes of the world, like watching humans wake up simultaneously in the morning. Or I was at a family reunion for my sweetie back in May, and we were at a large beach house on the beach in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and I didn't sleep well that first night, and I couldn't sleep in the bunk bed that was provided for me, so I wandered out to the very large living room, and I slept on the couch. And I woke up around 5 a.m. and the sky, which was previously black over the ocean, was starting to be blue. And I sat there quietly and I watched. And I watched as the sky turned from a dark blue, from black to a lighter blue, and then lighter yet, and lighter yet, and then the colors started. The reds and the yellows, and the oranges. Intense, intense colors over the ocean of crimsons. And I was very tired, so I'm going to get some of this wrong, but the crimsons and the oranges and just watching them fade, rather not fade, to grow brighter and to spread across the sky. And then at some point, that blaze on the horizon, that ball, that intense reddish-orange ball just emerges from the ocean and just works its way up the sky like it's having to claw its way through the mud, to claw off the night, to tear this down, to dig its way out and rise in the sky. But it will, and it does, inevitably, every single day. And it was just an amazing experience. It was done rising, and it was definitely like the sun up, shining rays by about 6:30 in the morning. So it took about an hour and a half. And it was, I'm so glad I got to watch it. I had a horrible day the next day because I didn't have any sleep, but it was amazing to watch that experience. And if you ever have the experience to watch a good sunrise over the ocean, or if you're on the West Coast, to watch the sunset over your ocean, do it. It's magical. I mean, some would call it a religious experience. It was absolutely amazing. But to watch these things happen, it's something special. Like I said, I'm not a morning person, and I know this is sounding like I'm a morning person. I'm not a morning person. When left to my own devices, I wake up between 10 a.m. and noon. I do. But there's something to be said for early mornings, to watch the world wake up around you. And it's something that I recommend to all people. I find it to be very inspiring. And maybe it'll inspire you in whatever your creativity is. Whether it's painting or writing or speaking, or whether you're more of a hard scientist and you want to study, you know, meteorology of what happens when that sun rises, then I definitely recommend doing that. As hackers, as I said, we have a tendency to, most hacker cons have a tendency to focus on the hard sciences. But we are definitely these days starting, one thing I love about HOPE, and I think I say this every year on the radio, is that it understands that hacking isn't about computers, that hacking is a process. I love the definition that is on the website. Excuse me, I'm a little distracted. I love the definition that is on the HOPE website for what's a hacker. And in fact, I'm going to look that up really quickly right now. If I can get the browser to work here. And Eli, is the keyboard not working? All right, I am moving away from the schedule. I'm sorry. Let us go to the FAQ here. If you go to the FAQ on the HOPE website, the definition for what a hacker is there is: a hacker is someone who is curious and creative and seeks to understand how things work, especially complicated systems. Many hackers use technology to perform their investigations and enjoy sharing information about their findings with other people. Often hackers are willing to exceed the boundaries of expected behavior to better understand the systems they are interested in. And I like this definition. It's a little limiting to me, I think, in some ways. I think it's more than just about understanding how things work. I think it's a way of solving problems as well. I think it's a way of... Sorry, I'm getting distracted. It's a way of observing the world around you. I think there might be something of a type of hacker that doesn't seek to influence or change. Now, that would be a highly controversial definition, and I might disagree with myself at this later. So I'm thinking out loud here, literally right now, that maybe our understanding of hacking in the future will include people who observe and report. And at that, maybe someone who likes to draw comparisons and who likes to make observations about things that don't usually necessarily connect, like I like working with the sacred and the profane, especially finding the sacred through the profane, through outlets that other people would consider wrong. I mean, one of those is my big thing, surprisingly enough, is, you know, sexuality and spirituality, of people doing sexual spiritual rituals or to discover what it's like to connect with their spirituality or for some the divine through their sexuality. A friend of mine, John, who is a deacon, as of right now he's still a deacon, he's becoming ordained as a minister today. He came to me with the idea of, he said it's a Carmelite idea, he has studied in the Carmelite tradition, to ask God to be with you while you do everyday things, like watching television, listening to the radio, driving the car. And I've tried this, even though I don't really believe in God, I was like, okay, I would like to go into this spiritual place. I'm going to invite whatever kind of spirituality, whether it's from me or from an outside source, to join me as I do this. And I got a lot of results with it, surprisingly. He said try it with naps. It didn't quite work with sleeping, but I'll give it a couple more shots. But one of the things he said is, you ever tried it with sex? And I'm like, no, I can't say that I have. He's like, try it sometime with sex. I'm like, well, I don't know when that's going to happen again, but I'll give it a shot. But I thought that was really interesting to have a Catholic, you know, priest candidate be telling me to try bringing those two things together, because that's just something I associate usually more with a form of paganism. But to take things that the world considers to be secular or even profane that, and to find spiritual meaning through them is something that fascinates me. I was going to say, you know, heavy drinking, but the Jews have a tradition on Purim to get so drunk that you cannot tell the difference between blessed be Mordecai, who is the hero of the Purim story, and cursed be Haman, who is the bad guy of the Purim story, and that every time the word Haman is said, they make a lot of noise, use these rattles and they stamp their feet to try to drive out his horrible name for the horrible things he did. And no, like, you were commanded, get crunk. And I think that's fascinating that, you know, there's a religion that basically says, you know, moderation in all things, including moderation itself. And to go forth and, you know, let yourself do this, but do it in a spiritual context and see what comes of it. And I find that fascinating. I read something on Tumblr with a person who said that they was the Unitarian Universalist who would really like to go to services in the morning, but said that that, you know, they were out dancing the night before and that trying to get up in the morning to go to services is hard, but that maybe that dancing is sacred too. Maybe going out and finding the music and joining with other people and moving bodies with other people and to surrender to the rhythm, it's a form of sacred. And maybe the next day is sacred, they said. Maybe the waking up the next morning at 11 a.m. going to the diner for fried potatoes with your friend a bit hungover is sacred. Maybe the potatoes are sacred, I think they said. And I really liked that. I thought that was really fascinating. And, you know, I might have to agree with them because potatoes, right? Like, who doesn't like potatoes? Who doesn't like potatoes, right? especially fried potatoes. Fried potatoes are the best. To go forth and find one's bliss, if one will, to find meaning in life in the seemingly meaningless, that sounds kind of hackery to me. And I have 2 minutes left here, and what I will do is I will start wrapping up. If there are any questions for me,
feel free to use them in the IRC channel here. I have enjoyed joining you this morning, and I'm glad to see that there's going to be somebody, something else coming on next. I'm not sure who or what, because they just gave me a 2-minute signal. Let's see, to wrap things up, explore, adventure, take in a lot of media, different types, things that interest you, things you wouldn't otherwise try out, listen to the world around you, ask questions of the world around you, think about it, think about what you've taken in. Try to make connections, especially in unexpected places. Let your subconscious mull over multiple things at the same time, and you'll start seeing things, connections in places you hadn't before, and having new insights. Write them down. Share them with people. Talk about them. Write about them on the internet, or not. Talk about them with your friends, or not. See if your new ideas can then lead to new ideas. Try something else. Explore the world around you with a discerning eye and a listening ear. I think that's kind of the hacker way to not just play with systems, but you know, play with your data and try to find new ways of doing and being and new understandings, and then share them with all of us, so that we all can become better people and make the world a better place. And to help humanity move forward as a whole. That I think this is the way that we can be hackers for good, and to be hackers in a way that will maximize our impact on the world. I mean, photography is wonderful, and finding holes is important, and whistleblowing can be important. I mean, there's, you know, it's controversial, there's issues with it, but all of these things are important. But if we can also step back and make observations and to try to bring sources together and do that, we can make a great difference in the world. And this has been a Fireside Chat with Cable Flame. It is currently 9:16 a.m. here in New York City. And joining us next, we have... Hold on a second.
What's up next?
It's us.
What?
Me and Stop A.
What's your program?
We don't have a program.
Okay.
Beaches and Stop A.
There we go. We have Beaches and Stop A up next. And this is Cable Flame signing off. Thank you for joining me.